Scottish Qualifications Authority. National Qualifications 2010. English for Speakers of Other Languages, Intermediate 2. Section A, Listening. Recording 1. Listen to this discussion between three people and answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 1, before you hear the recording.
Good morning and welcome to The Daily Debate. My name's Simon Pringle and I'll be with you until the news at 11 o'clock. Our topic today is wind farms and particularly the proposal to site 10 400-foot turbines at Colstain Rig near the village of Aiken. Now, this plan was turned down by Scottish Borders Council, but the company behind the proposal, Turbo Power UK, appealed to the Scottish Government, and yesterday, following a public inquiry, the government reversed the decision, giving the go-ahead. So, today in the programme, we have Michael Radley, a Turbo Power executive. Morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And Felicity Laidlaw, who is part of the group Borders Wind Farm Resistance.
Hi, Simon.
Now, the country around Aiken is unspoilt and tranquil, and Colstain Rig is the highest point for miles. Michael, tell me why you want to ruin it by putting a wind farm there.
Well, I don't know if ruin is the word I'd use. However, we looked at a number of locations and consulted widely with landowners in the community. And there's also the fact that there isn't a wind farm currently in the central borders.
Yes, the fact is that the eastern borders have already been ruined. There are wind farms all over the place, and now you want to destroy another area. It will be visible for miles around. What effect that's going to have on visitors, I don't know.
Well, Felicity, that particular part of the borders doesn't actually attract a high number of visitors. The countryside is nice enough, but it isn't as spectacular as the Highlands. People who come to the borders tend to visit the historic sites like abbeys and castles, and there aren't any in the area.
Well, they're certainly not going to come to see a massive wind farm.
But the Scottish Government has committed itself to renewable energy targets. 50% of the country's energy from renewables by 2020?
Yes.
So, shouldn't the borders play its part in producing that?
We already are. In terms of population, we're producing well above average from wind farms. Look, most people in Scotland live in and between Edinburgh and Glasgow. That's where the demand is. If there have to be wind farms, build them there, so there's less waste in sending electricity over long distances.
Well, Michael?
There already are some wind farms in the Central Belt. The largest one in Scotland is at Whiteley near Glasgow. It has 140 turbines and there are plans to expand it. However, the problem is that most of the land in the Central Belt is low-lying and quite flat, and turbines work much better if they're up on a hill.
That's absolute rubbish. Look at Edinburgh. It has plenty of hills. There's Arthur's Seat right in the city centre. If turbines are so inspiring, as you said, why not build them in Arthur's Seat?
So, why not, Michael?
Well,
I'll tell you why not. Because there are a lot of people in Edinburgh and they would object to it. No, the reason you come into the borders is because there's a small, scattered population and it's more difficult to organise resistance, and you know you can get away with it.
All right, Felicity, I think maybe we could move things on a bit. Michael, I wonder if you could tell us how you can justify wind farms in environmental terms.
Well, as you know, climate change is a serious issue and...
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Debate. My name's Simon Pringle and I'll be with you until the news at 11 o'clock. Our topic today is wind farms and particularly the proposal to site 10 400-foot turbines at Colstain Rig near the village of Aiken. Now, this plan was turned down by Scottish Borders Council, but the company behind the proposal, Turbo Power UK, appealed to the Scottish Government. And yesterday, following a public inquiry, the government reversed the decision, giving the go-ahead. So, today on the programme, we have Michael Radley, a Turbo Power executive. Morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And Felicity Laidlaw, who is part of the group Borders Wind Farm Resistance.
Hi, Simon.
Now, the country around Aiken is unspoilt and tranquil, and Colstain Rig is the highest point for miles. Michael, tell me why you want to ruin it by putting a wind farm there.
Well, I don't know if ruin is the word I'd use. However, we looked at a number of locations and consulted widely with landowners in the community. And there's also the fact that there isn't a wind farm currently in the central borders.
Yes, the fact is that the eastern borders have already been ruined. There are wind farms all over the place, and now you want to destroy another area. It will be visible for miles around. What effect that's going to have on visitors, I don't know.
Well, Felicity, that particular part of the borders doesn't actually attract a high number of visitors. The countryside is nice enough, but it isn't as spectacular as the Highlands. People who come to the borders tend to visit the historic sites like abbeys and castles, and there aren't any in the area.
Well, they're certainly not going to come to see a massive wind farm.
But the Scottish Government has committed itself to renewable energy targets. 50% of the country's energy from renewables by 2020?
Yes.
So, shouldn't the borders play its part in producing that?
We already are. In terms of population, we're producing well above average from wind farms. Look, most people in Scotland live in and between Edinburgh and Glasgow. That's where the demand is. If there have to be wind farms, build them there, so there's less waste in sending electricity over long distances.
Well, Michael?
There already are some wind farms in the Central Belt. The largest one in Scotland is at Whiteley near Glasgow. It has 140 turbines and there are plans to expand it. However, the problem is that most of the land in the Central Belt is low-lying and quite flat, and turbines work much better if they're up on a hill.
That's absolute rubbish. Look at Edinburgh. It has plenty of hills. There's Arthur's Seat right in the city centre. If turbines are so inspiring as you said, why not build them in Arthur's Seat?
So, why not, Michael?
Well,
I'll tell you why not. Because there are a lot of people in Edinburgh and they would object to it. No, the reason you come into the borders is because there's a small, scattered population and it's more difficult to organise resistance and you know you can get away with it.
All right, Felicity, I think maybe we could move things on a bit. Michael, I wonder if you could tell us how you can justify wind farms in environmental terms.
Well, as you know, climate change is a serious issue and...
Recording 2. Listen to this conversation between a husband and wife and answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 2, before you hear the recording.
Do you want some coffee?
No, thanks. I'll wait a while. Look, Hannah, leave the dishes. Call the kids back. They can clear them.
No, I told them to do their homework. I'll do them while the kettle's boiling.
OK, I'll give you a hand.
No, you sit there and fill in this form. I've asked you about a dozen times. Here's a pen. Get on with it.
Oh, yes. What's it for again?
It's for Ben. It's an application for a leisure card. It's so he can go to the gym and pay less. He's costing us a fortune just now.
Why can't you do it?
Because it involves a direct debit, and you do the bank stuff.
Oh, OK. Ben's going to the gym quite a lot these days. Do you think he meets girls there?
Maybe. Good thing if he does. But I think he's just keen on it. He wants to exercise and build up his muscles, which is quite unusual in this country.
Oh, don't start on that again. You're always going on about how unhealthy everybody is. It's just because you lived in Denmark. I know things are better in Denmark. You've told me often enough.
Well, it annoys me. Britain's a rich country, and the sports facilities are so poor. Things are better in many European countries. I just don't understand our politicians. They go on and on about how the population is overweight and unhealthy. But when you ask them to spend something on sports facilities, suddenly there's no money available.
Well, we're putting quite a lot of money into different sports. We did very well at the last Olympics. We got, how many? 19 gold medals? How many did Denmark get?
2, if you're interested. But Britain's got about 11 times their population. So you could say that for its size, Denmark actually did better. In fact, if you want to think about population, lots of countries did better. Australia's got about a third of the number of people in the UK, but we only managed to beat them for the first time. Anyway, as far as I can see, most of the money that goes into sport comes from the National Lottery, not the government. But that's not the point. It isn't really about giving money to successful or developing athletes. It's down at the basic level that it matters, helping everybody to take part in sport.
Yes, but having successful sportsmen and women inspires others to take up sports.
Some people, yes, but most only do it for a few weeks. Anyway, that isn't any use if you don't have anywhere to practice. Look, there's a suburb not far from where I used to work in Copenhagen. It has about, I don't know, maybe 20,000 people. But it's got a really good sports centre, and that's only one of many. There isn't a city in Britain with sports facilities anything like as good as Copenhagen.
OK, point taken.
The thing is, people in Denmark see their local sports centre as a place to go in the evening. They don't just go for the sport. They meet their friends there, drink coffee and so on. Here, people might go for a swim or play squash or something, but after it, they either go home or go for a drink. Sport's seen as something different, not part of a normal life.
But do you think it would be possible to change that culture?
I think it would be a good idea to try. Do you want some coffee?
No, thanks. I'll wait a while. Look, Hannah, leave the dishes. Call the kids back. They can clear them.
No, I told them to do their homework. I'll do them while the kettle's boiling.
OK, I'll give you a hand.
No, you sit there and fill in this form. I've asked you about a dozen times. Here's a pen. Get on with it.
Oh, yes. What's it for again?
It's for Ben. It's an application for a leisure card. It's so he can go to the gym and pay less. He's costing us a fortune just now.
Why can't you do it?
Because it involves a direct debit, and you do the bank stuff.
Oh, OK. Ben's going to the gym quite a lot these days. Do you think he meets girls there?
Maybe. Good thing if he does. But I think he's just keen on it. He wants to exercise and build up his muscles, which is quite unusual in this country.
Oh, don't start on that again. You're always going on about how unhealthy everybody is. It's just because you lived in Denmark. I know things are better in Denmark. You've told me often enough.
Well, it annoys me. Britain's a rich country and the sports facilities are so poor. Things are better in many European countries. I just don't understand our politicians. They go on and on about how the population is overweight and unhealthy. But when you ask them to spend something on sports facilities, suddenly there's no money available.
Well, we're putting quite a lot of money into different sports. We did very well at the last Olympics. We got how many? 19 gold medals? How many did Denmark get?
2, if you're interested. But Britain's got about 11 times their population. So you could say that for its size, Denmark actually did better. In fact, if you want to think about population, lots of countries did better. Australia's got about a third of the number of people in the UK, but we only managed to beat them for the first time. Anyway, as far as I can see, most of the money that goes into sport comes from the National Lottery, not the government. But that's not the point. It isn't really about giving money to successful or developing athletes. It's down at the basic level that it matters, helping everybody to take part in sport.
Yes, but having successful sportsmen and women inspires others to take up sports.
Some people, yes, but most only do it for a few weeks. Anyway, that isn't any use if you don't have anywhere to practice. Look, there's a suburb not far from where I used to work in Copenhagen. It has about, I don't know, maybe 20,000 people. But it's got a really good sports centre. And that's only one of many. There isn't a city in Britain with sports facilities anything like as good as Copenhagen.
OK, point taken.
The thing is, people in Denmark see their local sports centre as a place to go in the evening. They don't just go for the sport. They meet their friends there, drink coffee and so on. Here, people might go for a swim or play squash or something, but after it, they either go home or go for a drink. Sport's seen as something different, not part of a normal life.
But do you think it would be possible to change that culture?
I think it would be a good idea to try.
Recording 3. Listen to the presentation and answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 3, before you hear the recording.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dr. Sohaila Sharif, and I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Transport Studies at the University. I'm very pleased to be here tonight. Professor Smeaton, the chair of this working group, asked me to come along and give you my thoughts about the future of traffic and transport in the city. I'd like to say to begin with that these thoughts are my own. They're backed up by research, of course, but at the end of the day, they're my opinions. The hope is that they will provide a starting point for discussion, and from that, you as a group can reach some conclusions. In turn, these will be written up as a report and presented to the City Council. So let's take a look at the current situation. I think it's fair to say that the traffic situation in this city at the moment has never been worse. However, that may not be altogether a bad thing, because a lot of the problems are caused by building work for the new tram system. Streets are being dug up all over the city, traffic is being diverted, and there are many slowdowns and jams. However, after all the work is finished, we should have a modern tram system, and that's a good thing. Why? Well, trams move so much faster than buses, and people like them because of this. What you have to do, you see, is get the motorists out of their cars. But buses just don't do this, because they don't move much faster than cars. But if you can give the people that choice, half an hour in your car or 10 minutes in a tram, that can make the difference. We've also got park and ride. You can leave your car in a car park on the edge of the city and take a bus into the centre. But if these car parks are linked to the tram system, they'll become much more popular. One area I feel the city is overlooking at the moment is cycling. Now, let me give you a situation. You're driving along and you have to slow down because there's a cyclist ahead of you. Very annoying, you think. Well, it may be, and there's no doubt that some drivers don't like cyclists. But where does this line of thinking take us? What's the answer? That cyclists should leave their bikes at home and drive cars? More cars on the road, helping to destroy the environment? Do we really want that? Last year, I spent a month studying the traffic situation in Amsterdam. That's a city where a high number of people use bikes. And the result is that traffic moves much more smoothly than it does here. Interesting that, isn't it? You could say there's streets ahead of us, huh? The fact is that if even a quarter of drivers here left their cars at home and jumped onto a bike, traffic would move faster and a lot of people would be healthier. So that's my recommendation. Get in a traffic expert from Amsterdam. Make this city more cycle-friendly. Encourage people to use bikes. Just to finish, let me give you some figures. In Amsterdam, 40% of people cycle to work, and the figure for adult obesity in the Netherlands is 10%. In Edinburgh, 4% of people cycle to work, and the adult obesity figure for Scotland is 24%. Work it out for yourself. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dr. Sohaila Sharif, and I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Transport Studies at the University. I'm very pleased to be here tonight. Professor Smeaton, the chair of this working group, asked me to come along and give you my thoughts about the future of traffic and transport in the city. I'd like to say to begin with that these thoughts are my own. They're backed up by research, of course, but at the end of the day, they're my opinions. The hope is that they will provide a starting point for discussion, and from that, you as a group can reach some conclusions. In turn, these will be written up as a report and presented to the City Council. So let's take a look at the current situation. I think it's fair to say that the traffic situation in this city at the moment has never been worse. However, that may not be altogether a bad thing, because a lot of the problems are caused by building work for the new tram system. Streets are being dug up all over the city, traffic is being diverted, and there are many slowdowns and jams. However, after all the work is finished, we should have a modern tram system, and that's a good thing. Why? Well, trams move so much faster than buses, and people like them because of this. What you have to do, you see, is get the motorists out of their cars. But buses just don't do this, because they don't move much faster than cars. But if you can give the people that choice, half an hour in your car or 10 minutes in a tram, that can make the difference. We've also got park and ride. You can leave your car in a car park on the edge of the city and take a bus into the centre. But if these car parks are linked to the tram system, they'll become much more popular. One area I feel the city is overlooking at the moment is cycling. Now, let me give you a situation. You're driving along and you have to slow down because there's a cyclist ahead of you. Very annoying, you think. Well, it may be, and there's no doubt that some drivers don't like cyclists. But where does this line of thinking take us? What's the answer? That cyclists should leave their bikes at home and drive cars? More cars on the road, helping to destroy the environment? Do we really want that? Last year, I spent a month studying the traffic situation in Amsterdam. That's a city where a high number of people use bikes. And the result is that traffic moves much more smoothly than it does here. Interesting that, isn't it? You could say there's streets ahead of us, huh? The fact is that if even a quarter of drivers here left their cars at home and jumped onto a bike, traffic would move faster and a lot of people would be healthier. So that's my recommendation. Get in a traffic expert from Amsterdam. Make the city more cycle-friendly. Encourage people to use bikes. Just to finish, let me give you some figures. In Amsterdam, 40% of people cycle to work, and the figure for adult obesity in the Netherlands is 10%. In Edinburgh, 4% of people cycle to work, and the adult obesity figure for Scotland is 24%. Work it out for yourself.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.